Welcome to the Williams Nikan YB Herton phone conference line.
Good morning.
How are you, Ruth?
Fine, thank you.
This is Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Oh.
I saw this gorgeous weather.
It is awesome. I even have hope for my... Something wrong with my phone here. I'm here. I'm making that static. I have hope for my tomatoes to ripen.
Mine is great last year, but I put red plastic under them, and I didn't this year. Oh, I did put it in there, but it blew away because I didn't have it well anchored. And they're so green. Are yours red?
My poopy tomatoes, you know, are redding up. But, and I've had, of course, you know, cherry tomatoes. I always plant one or two bushes of those, so they're my consolation, you know, when the blight hits or something. But I have two heirlooms, that are, you know, must have 40 pounds of tomatoes on them and very big. And the first one this morning was slightly pink. So they're going to ripen. I think they're going to ripen.
What heirlooms are they?
I love Brandywine.
Hmm?
Brandywine heirloom. I get it at Fred Meyer, and I get it late in the season, and hopefully I get it. Well, I try not to put it in the garden until after that lilac blight. That is the early blight that hits tomatoes. If you have lilacs around, you'll know, because the flowers turn dark, you know, when they're still in full bloom, and that's the same blight, the tomatoes, in the early blight. Anyway, I try to wait for that because I have a neighbor with lilacs, but anyway, I put some out, and two of my heirlooms got them, but I picked the biggest and strongest and set them out, you know, as soon as the lilacs are done with their disease.
Last year I had a persimmon.
Oh, really?
It was a persimmon tomato.
Mm.
And it was really, really good. It was nice.
I never heard of that. Where did you get it?
So I tried it. I get mine from several different... I started them from seed.
Ah. Yeah.
So I didn't get it around here.
Do you think that red plastic works?
I certainly did work last year. I've never had that kind of result.
Well, I will try it then.
So, I try to do it again, and I was using the same plastic that I had helped the year before so that I could get them up, the tomatoes up on their vines, and so we had put the stakes down in the ground, and those stakes held the plastic in place.
Right.
So, the climbing thing. That worked really well, so I'm going to do that again.
Well, I will try red plastic, because I filled bags of black plastic with water and set them on the ground to keep the heat in the, you know, the whole point is to get the roots warm. Keep the roots warm, that's what they like. And that works, but that's really labor intensive.
Discouraging when you put it all down and you put I put rocks around on them and everything, but they still blew away.
Oh no!
I have my rows are hilled up and blew down into the places in between the rows.
Mm.
I have sort of unraised beds or something. They don't have sideboards.
Mm-hmm.
So, good morning, everybody. I hear everybody coming on to the call, but I don't see them on the webcam yet, except for, hi, Monty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's get started. So let us not take up Monty's time, but I certainly enjoy talking gardening with Joan.
It's Nancy.
Oh. Good morning, Nancy. I have to say one other thing. I was just been so excited using my dried tomatoes that I dried out of my garden from last year and just sprinkling them into the eggs. And last night I fixed onions and leeks and a squash, a summer squash out of my garden. And I put in some cashews and those tomatoes, and they were so good. Amazon. Yummy. So let me introduce our speaker for Friday, Awesome Monty.
Good morning.
Anyway, Monty.
Thanks, Ruth. Appreciate that. Good morning, everybody. Well, here it is, September the 7th, 2012. We're here on our normal call on every Monday through Friday morning. And like I said, I'd like to welcome you all here on the call, whether you're on the WebEx or just the landline. Of course, our mission is to teach and support the practice of habitual style choices, becoming more mind and body fit. And I guess, you know, knowledge is important. And the choice that we have is to, when we hear about certain things, and that is to decide if that's something that is beneficial for us, but all kinds of knowledge is very, very important, and we strive for it all in our life. I'd also like to state that these calls are being recorded every day, and by Steve Crowfoot from Utah, and he puts them up on a site at allswell.org. That's very important to me because as of last Tuesday, I was not able to be on the call, and it was nice to be able to go back and re-listen to Karen's, who hosts the call on that particular day, which is Terrific and Transparent Tuesday, to go back and listen so I could get some notes and got a lot of good information. So one of the things I always highly recommend is for those people that hear about a subject or want to know more about it or have missed a call, it's always nice to go to those particular recordings and be able to listen to them. And like I always say every Friday morning is that in most cases when we hear something once and we go back and re-listen to it again, we hear things that we didn't hear the first time. Also on Mondays, Fridays, what I do is kind of go over and take some my notes and listen nuggets that were to me, and then relay them on what happened during the week. So, starting this last Monday, of course, which was Labor Day, we had a call, and it's Mary Lou host the call, and it was back to basics, and she talked about basically pretty much the getting the 10 points and doing as best as we can possibly do on a daily basis, and averaging that over the week, and or how many days that you can do this. And then come up and know that the closer you get to 10 points, the better off your health, definitely, in my opinion, is going to be. She talked about also how dehydration basically promotes allergies. And to keep digestion running smoothly, we need water. If we don't, we get mind fog. It keeps our blood thin, and I know that to be true because when I go to my doctor and they usually... I don't know if it's because the older I'm getting or whatever, it seems time it's harder to draw blood from me, but they always want me to drink at least 2 glasses of water an hour before I come in to have my blood work done. So I know that's basically true. And then sugar cravings could be, in other words, if we get sugar cravings or have sweet cravings, just drink a glass of good old Pymag water, and usually those cravings will go away. She talked about, of course, the sleep, the nutritionals, the meals, the exercise, and of journaling, and how journaling is so important. She talked about how cold water produces glutathione. We also talked about the importance of sleeping in total darkness. And, of course, that refers to our sleep mask, which basically helps us to keep any kind of light that we have in our rooms or from the sun coming up. Of course, it's usually not up the way it used to be during the summer, but that night light can basically, even a night light in your room can cause some situations with the mind. So that's very, very important. When our melatonin is affected by forms of light, so it's nice to be able to know that melatonin is important for help sleep. And the answer, of course, is a new sleep mask that we come out with, which was talked about quite heavily, and how it really is, seems to be a lot lighter and works better than the old one. She talked about a great night's health, that sleep was very important. So, of course, the darker you can be in your room, the better off it is. On Tuesday, Karen, Transparent and Terrific Tuesday, basically what happens there, if people give their reports on how they've done, or have they need some suggestions on make it better than what they've done. Ruth talked about the Toxin 12 card that she carries around with her, basically to show people about all the toxins that, and the main 12 that are important, and how that our water is so important, and all the toxins that we have in our body. Karen talked about carbs and insulin, that eating certain types of carbohydrates, I'll use, say, to basically certain ones increase the insulin. And as a diabetic, I know that to be very, very true. And also, if you eat too much of the carbs, you can actually get insulin resistance, which means your body needs more insulin in order for it to do what it needs to do. She talked about basically five other things, and they were all big words, which in re-listening to the call last night, I couldn't even spell them. But she listed five things that you could take to help burn fat and basically keep the insulin down. She also talked about mushrooms and how they're so good for our bodies. And one of the things that, of course, we have in Nikin is that is our immunity, because it has 14, a different combination of 14 different mushrooms in there, and that mushrooms can be very, very good for immunity. And with this year coming up with influenza and the sniffles and whatever that we get during the winter, that it's important to have our body with as much being able to resist and have the immunity that we need in our body. And, of course, the mushrooms is the way to do that, and that's our product called Immunity. She talked about something, and then towards the end of the call, people talked about how coconut oil was doing some real good and beneficial things to their body. Donna came on and talked about her husband had a sore on his leg, and they put some Pymag water on it, and he started eating more lactoferrin, and I forget what the other one was. I forgot to write it down. But that the sore is really coming and doing some real good. And Ruth talked about how she's got some spots on her arm that are now going away by utilizing the coconut oil and rubbing on it. Wednesday, Ruth talked about what was in our gut. It was the main subject was out with the bad and in with the good, because our gut basically has certain microbes in it, but the trouble there, what they're finding is those bad microbes are also start to be found in the brains of people. So we need to be very important about that. Of course, we talked about newborn babies are even affected by gut microbes and microbial. Talked about how lactoferrin is so basically comes to the rescue to help take care of that situation. And that gut bacteria is always under attack. The good ones are always under attack for the bad ones. So we need to be sure we stay away as much as we can from antibiotics, she talked about, were bad, antibacterial soaps. She talked about obesity and pollution are all bad things in regards to that. And I guess I totally can understand the antibacterial soaps, because it seems like we have lately a lot of people do that, but what we don't realize is that just that antibacterial soap, when we wash our hands with it or whatever, that actually sometimes our bodies become, I'll use the word, immune to it, and it doesn't do the job that it needs to do. But also our hands are always going to our face. In most cases, we touch different foods with our hands and everything, and that's why that they find that it's basically antibacterial soaps aren't as good as they claim to be. Mary Lou and Karen shared testimonies on how lactoferrin has helped children in regards to what they've seen, that the probiotic foods are a great way to keep the bad guys on the run. And that's very important. And like Ruth said, the bad guys out and the good guys in, and lactoferrin is one of the good guys. She also talked about fermented vegetables on foods they're beneficial to our gut. Inflammation can be, they're finding that the microbes in the body creates a lot of inflammation in the microbial and E. coli. Thursday, Nancy came on is our host on Thursdays, and she talked about a product called astaxanthin that is very good for our bodies through a She read an article with Dr. Merkel, and Mercola, I should say, and found that it was very good for radiation. So, and she, the week before that, she talked about the radiation machines that we have to go through in order to fly, and to stay away from them as much as impossible. That people should basically opt out of the scanners. If we get enough people opting out of the scanners, maybe they'll start thinking about certain things, because it would really slow the lines down, and a lot of people would probably get ticked off. She talked about antioxidants, the water and the fat, or the lipids that we need, that different antioxidants take different things to help them digest properly. She used, about using both types of antioxidants are important for fat and water lipids. Clinical trials verify this very important thing. One of the things about astaxanthin was that one of the things it does, it's a kind of, it gives things pink, a pigmentation. And one of the things that we see that a lot about is flamingos. Flamingos, of course, are pink, but unfortunately when they're born, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but they're white. And it, based upon what they eat, is why they turn the colors that they do. And if they don't get a lot of those little things that they eat, like shrimp and krill and stuff like that, that they would stay white. So there's a lot of astaxanthin and things like salmon and carotenoid antioxidants are very, very deep in, with astaxanthin. And the deeper the color in the carotenoids, like the salmon and the different vegetables that are very, very deep in color. And that is why a healthy diet is so important. We need lots of vegetables and fruits. Astaxanthin is in our mitochondria. So that was pretty well much it. If you need to know more about those type of things, and things like farmed salmon, things that are pretty much farmed and not out in the nature itself, don't really carry that particular astaxanthin the way that it should. So these ways of, you can actually supplement that if you, in regards to it. So it's a very, very important nutrient and antioxidant that our body needs. Also on Thursday, towards the end of the call, Karen brought up a question in regards to potassium. And I think the question was, really, why is potassium so important to our body, and how much we should have, and where does it come from? So I thought today we'd talk a little bit about potassium. Does anybody have anything that last week was maybe their golden nugget that they heard that kind of turned on the light switch for them?
Well, Monty, I really cared about that that gut discussion and the interaction with lactoferrin because of a friend of mine that's pregnant. And Ruth, you're gonna get a link or a reference for that. The Guardian article that has that, because I think I can give her a printout of that and a printout of the lactoferrin stuff, and along with a gift, and hopefully she'll take that.
Okay. If you could send me a reminder, that would be good. That was
okay.
The Mercola also.
Okay, great. But I'm kind of cranked about that. She's a wonderful person.
Well, you know, lactoferrin is a product that, in my opinion, is, you know, children get that when they're first born, and how it actually helps so much in regards to fight the bad bugs in our body. And I just kind of, when somebody asked me what does lactoferrin do, and I pretty much says, well, what it does, it goes down and grabs those bad things and makes them so they don't actually absorb into the body and just pass right on through. And you know, lactoferrin works in so many ways, and Dr. Naidu and his, we're bringing that to our body, to Nikin, to allowing us to have that opportunity to merchandise it.
Yeah, I'm about to start my my research test with lactoferrin. I had to build up a stock for, you have to take a double dose the first month, and I'm on auto ship. And incidentally, we should remember what you say today about potassium, because lactoferrin has an effect on calcium. And that is a key thing, to have potassium in your cells and calcium outside of your cells. So the things you say today about potassium will matter with respect to the lactoferrin. So I'm interested.
I'll go ahead and get started then on that. And anytime you'd like to get any more information you feel that needs brought out about potassium, feel free to chime in, Joan. Okay? So the miracle of potassium. Well, you know, potassium, one of the most important minerals in the human body. And, of course, it's absolutely essential for good health and life itself. Our bodies contain more than twice as much potassium as they do sodium. A 300-pound person, for instance, has about 210 grams of potassium and 90 grams of sodium. 98% of the potassium in our body is inside our cells, and it is the principal electrolyte in our cells. And that brings up another subject I'll talk about one day, and that's electrolytes. But anyhow, potassium also buffers acid in the body. It also helps keep to maintain the alkalinity of our body fluids, and potassium is a cofactor in many reactions, energy producing and muscle synthesis. Like Joan just said, that the potassium is pretty much found inside all of our living cells and in both plants and animals. Of course, many of the richest sources of potassium, which are, of course, are our fresh foods, especially fresh vegetables, fruits, and legumes. Despite its great importance, potassium is often overlooked. It's an overlooked nutrient. We don't really hear that much about potassium, but neutralists have given it much attention because it is found in so many foods that unless they are a clear sign of malnutrition, a deficiency is believed to be unlikely. Research, however, is finding that potassium deficiencies is far more common than they are previously expected. They go on to say that many health professionals believe it is one of the keys to fighting the increased incidences of degenerative diseases that plague our society today. They've done several studies, of course, on potassium, have indicated that potassium deficiencies exist as many as 20%. I thought that was an interesting figure of all people that are basically hospitalized. In addition, they go on to say that about 14% of the people who visit the doctor for various complaints have low potassium levels. And here again, the symptoms of course, low potassium are muscle weakness, tiredness, low energy. You know, we always wonder why we get muscle cramps. That's a good reason. It's even tingling or numbness in certain parts of our body. Abdominal cramping or bloating. Bloating is another example of low potassium. Could be. Irregular heartbeat means potassium. It could be a problem. Neurological problems. And as research investigates the role of potassium as on our health, they are discovering that the association between low potassium and many common health problems, particularly in relation to cardiovascular health. So we'll get into that a little bit in regards to, for instance, like blood pressure. The researchers conclude that a potassium diet could serve as an effective alternative to drug therapy in people with moderately high blood pressure. They're finding that if you have the proper amount of potassium in your body, that it basically will help lower the blood pressure that we have. And for those that have either high or moderately high, it's something that you possibly need to think about. In heart disease, it says that in certain populations where the consumption of potassium is high, cardiovascular diseases are low. So here we get into high fruit and vegetable eating them. Our immoderate diet is also associated with reduced risk of heart disease. So the more fruits and vegetables we eat, basically they're finding that that fruits and vegetables are very high in potassium, that again increases the rate of possibly heart. Potassium is a heart-protective nutrient. As noted previously, a deficiency in potassium can cause an abnormal heartbeat, I think it's called arrhythmia, which can weaken and disrupt proper heart function. And so it goes on to say that potassium also appears to protect the lining within the artery wall from developing plaque, which is the underlying cause of heart disease. Finding that potassium basically has a remarkable ability to protect the heart even, and that's the key here, even when the organ is subjected to a variety of toxins that can cause a heart or fate attack. This doctor, Peroshi, I think is his name, he reviewed 13 studies in which a variety of potential fatal poisons which target and seriously damage the heart were essentially nullified by the administration of potassium. It is quite obvious, the doctor says, the potassium shows an astounding capacity to protect the mitochondria, which is the heart, against a wide variety of cardiotoxin agents. Since potassium can protect the heart even after it has been subject to heart damage agents, the doctor goes on to say that suggests that it may be very useful in the prevention of heart attacks as well. And then he goes on to talk about basically strokes and at the various studies. And here again, like I say, I'm taking this from a book from Dr. Fife. And he, of course, has references where you can, when he says something about a study or something, he backs that up with references, and where he tells you where you can go in the back of the book to find out and research that particular reference or situation on your own. Also, they're finding that low potassium consumption increases the risk of stroke. Research has shown that people who eat highest amount of potassium-rich fruits and vegetables have a significantly reduced chance of suffering a stroke. The same degree of protection can be obtained from taking potassium supplements. Another doctor goes on to say, Albert Asherio, I think is his name. He's an MD, Associate Professor of Nutrition and Epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health. He says that he headed one of the largest studies to date on the relationship between potassium and strokes. And in that study, included almost 44,000 men between the ages of 40 and 75. And none of those which were basically diagnosed were didn't have cardiovascular or diabetes prior to starting this research. And that over an 8-year period, they found that out of the 44,000, that only 328 strokes were reported. And researchers found that individuals in the top of it who have a large amount of potassium in the body, that the major difference between the two diets of the two groups was in the consumption of fruits and vegetables. In the higher range, for those that didn't get strokes, they were eating anywhere about 9 servings daily in the in the highest potassium. And those who were in the bottom that did basically come up with the stroke side of things, that they were the ones that were not eating as much of vitamin fruits and vegetables that they basically what is even recommended. The ones that had the high blood pressure, they were taking about 1 gram a day, had a 60% reduction risk of stroke when compared to those with high blood pressure who weren't taking supplements. So that's quite a, that's quite a big 60% for those that were taking potassium, eating the good fruits and vegetables, and taking the supplements. The other thing that I found, that even it's good for bone and health joint, and here what Joan talked about, calcium, is that potassium and calcium are alkalizing agents. Diets high in acid-forming foods acidify the body. Heavily exercise also increases acidity. Calcium is used to buffer the acid, and in the process, it is pulled out of the body. Potassium can also buffer the acid and thereby reduce the amount of calcium used up in this process. So that, again, shows another total aspect of the benefits of potassium in regards to help allowing that we don't reject or resorb so much calcium. Healthy joints and bones go together. Arthritis is a process in which joints degenerate. Arthritis sufferers have been found to have low potassium levels. This suggests that potassium may also help to keep joints strong and healthy and ward off degenerative joint diseases. And I think that probably has a lot to do with calcium, too. But this doctor performed a large controlled clinic and trial testing potassium supplements against rheumatoid arthritis and reported dramatic decrease in pain in all basic patients that he checked over. Ruth has talked to us about digestive health and why, it's so important to have digestive health. And he goes on to say here that potassium is well is well absorbed from foods in the digestive tract. Muscles, including those along the digestive tract, require potassium to function properly. Without adequate potassium, muscle function declines. That means that the muscles that line our digestive tracts push digested foods through the stomach, small intestine, and large intestine, the colon. If these muscles become weakened, they cannot perform the function in an efficient manner, which basically that we just don't get the nutrients and things that we need in our body. He goes on to say, how do we get potassium in our diet? Well, potassium is well absorbed from foods, but it is not stored in significantly large amounts in our body, so we need to consume it daily to satisfy the body's needs. Most natural foods, which of course are fruits, vegetables, and legumes, and meat, contain ample amounts of potassium. Now, where we have the problem with potassium, and I think that's why the reason that it's so low potassium is getting to be pretty prevalent within our culture, and that is that processed and packaged foods like baked foods, canned fruits and vegetables, and heat and served meals, I guess you call them the old TV dinners, ready-to-eat cereals and luncheon meats are depleted in potassium and enriched with sodium. They found that isolated populations that continue to eat the same foods as they have eaten for generations eat their 3 to 10 times more potassium as they do sodium. And, of course, that's just the opposite of what we typically eat here in a Western diet. Hypertension affects less than 1% of those people that don't eat a lot of the Western-type foods and meals, the prepared meals that we, most of the population here, eats. Now, our kidneys are designed to conserve sodium and excrete potassium. Since our bodies contain more than twice as much potassium as sodium, it is logical to assume that a healthy diet should also contain at least twice as much potassium as sodium. Now, some authorities out there in the field and researchers believe that a 4-to-1 ratio is better. And I'm going to go to a table here, which basically shows that certain potassium, sodium contents of various foods, and notice that the potassium content of most fresh foods is typically 5, 10 to 20 or more times higher than sodium. Many people are subclinically potassium deficient. In other words, they consume just enough potassium to prevent an outward deficiency. And some of those, these foods that are high in potassium is, of course, asparagus. It shows here most of these. That's a 1 cup of asparagus, for instance, gives you 404 milligrams of potassium. Avocado is very high. It's 690 milligrams, but only 11 grams of salt. Another one would be cantaloupe, are very high, 417. Kidney beans are very high. They're 669 in a cup of kidney beans, cooked kidney beans, lima beans. Peas cooked are 434. A potato cooked is 610 grams. A raw tomato basically has, in a 1 cup chopped raw tomato, it has 427 grams of potassium in it, but only 9 grams of salt. And, of course, when you get over here to the other list of items that are very high in sodium, which are basically processed foods as an example, cottage cheese, for instance, has only 194 grams of potassium, but 918 grams of sodium. Hamburger, 220 grams of potassium, but 551 grams of hamburger. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. Pretzels, as an example, has only 82 grams of potassium, but sodium, it has 814 grams of sodium, and that's basically of 10 pretzels or 10 twists it shows here. So I thought that was pretty interesting. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, how do we get more? The average American diet supplies about 1,500 to 5,000 milligrams of potassium a day. Most Western countries probably have a similar intake. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services recommends that we get 4,600 milligrams a day of potassium. Therefore, the vast majority of people are consuming suboptimal amounts of potassium. So that's pretty well much basically why we need potassium, the foods that it has in it, and one of the things that I'm going to talk about at a later date, I know, which will probably not surprise a lot of people, but that is basically that coconut water is very, very high in potassium compared to sodium, and I'll get into that subject on another day about how that coconut water can be very, very beneficial to us because it is what they consider to be living water. So that's my comments on potassium. Joan, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, I'm just thanking you so much. You know, when you give information, you start way with the intellectual and you go all the way down to, okay, so at the grocery store, buy asparagus and avocados and cantaloupes. And I just love the way you do that. The one thing I wanted to say, and I am trying, and I just don't have the time to do this, but there's like a triangle between potassium, calcium, and sodium. And I do know that sodium will replace, if your sodium is too high in your consumption, it will replace the potassium that is inside your cell. And that is part of chronic disorder. You touched on that potassium-calcium thing. These three things work together. I'm sure everything works together, but these three things and how they work together, because I want to, I have reduced, and I think stopping the diabetes, you know, what had to do with reducing the sodium that I was eating and a lot of other stuff. But at any rate, how those three work together, I would love to know. If anybody can find any references on what potassium does inside the cell. I know it's needed for a lot of reactions inside the cell, and that's about all I know. And that potassium doesn't do those. I mean, that sodium, if sodium gets inside your cells, and pushes the potassium out, you don't have that kind of, like a coenzyme. I mean, it works to help the mitochondria and other stuff inside the cell. Anyway.
Yeah, that's something he talks about here, too, which I didn't discuss, and that was basically in our cells, that sodium concentrate on the outside of the cells, while potassium is concentrated more on the inside. So
for healthy cells, yes.
Yeah, for sodium and potassium, the exchange with each other across the cell wall to maintain this balance. So I didn't get into that today, but, you know, it is exactly what you say in regards to, then I don't think a lot of people really understand what's called the intercellular and exterior cellular of liquids that, you know, that are around the fluid, the cell that are around our cells, the fluid.
Right, and that inflammation, that's all that fluid coming out of the cells, all that fluid, you know, that inflammation, and that's what's not good. It's not so much that you have a bunch of fluid outside that's not good. It's that you don't have the potassium inside the cells to do what it needs to do. And that key thing about calcium and potassium both buffering acid and that relationship with the I think that's one of the real kickers for the lactoferrin working so well.
Well, you know, Dr. Naidu's done a whole lot of research on all these things, so he's pretty
well. I know, he probably has it all straight.
I would think so.
Yeah, I know he does.
Maybe he does, yes. Anybody else have any comments or questions?
Monty, what was the amount of potassium suggested? You mentioned it back there, and I and missed it.
Well, now I got to go back there. But,
I wrote down 4-1 is a better ratio, but it goes up to 20-1.
Yeah, it talks about, I think it was 4,000.
Milligrams.
I have 4,000 milligrams of potassium in a day.
Well, that was the U.S. recommendation, but before you mentioned the word asparagus being high in avocado, you gave a ratio on sodium to potassium and what was good, according to the researcher.
4 to 1, they're recommending, is the best. The average, the USDA Health and Human Services recommends that we get 4,600 milligrams a day. Okay? It also says that, in contrast, the average consumption of sodium is about 4,000 to 600 milligrams a day. So what we're basically doing, and here I think that goes back to a lot of the kind of foods that we eat, that most people are getting more sodium in their body than they are potassium, and that's the problem. There should be where from well, you just use the figure, what they use here, 4 to 1 ratio. You should be getting 4 parts potassium compared to 1 part sodium. And that's why they feel that we're just getting too much sodium in our bodies, and it's why we have a lot of the diseases and the problems and the situations that we have, particularly in regards to the heart.
And with all that sodium and not enough potassium, that puts a load on what the calcium has to do. And so the calcium gets sucked out of your bones to buffer the acid, because the potassium's not there to buffer it.
Right. Right on. Anybody else have any comments before we wrap the call?
I have a recipe I want to send you for a raw pancake made with no wheat belly flour, no flour at all, coconut cream and coconut in it. And I'm going to copy this recipe and send it to Ruth. So and she can disperse it to you, because you like coconut so much. And
you got that right.
And it is so good. You're going to faint. You're going to faint.
I hope not.
No, you're going to eat it. You're going to eat it. It's got flax. I hope you, do you have a grinder? I hope you have a grinder.
I got flax seed and I have a grinder.
We should have a pancake breakfast.
In fact, I have two tablespoons of ground flax seed, along with my wonderful Omega Green DHA, which has basically flaxseed oil in it and algae in it. And so I feel like that flax has really helped me a lot, particularly in regards to the inflammation within my body.
Okay, Ruth, I will send you an email with that recipe that you can forward to people, and a reminder about the
garden.
Oh, yeah. We should all try it.
Yes, I want the recipe.
Okay.
I think on next Friday, if nobody minds, I'm going to talk about coconut water. And I know everybody thinks I'm crazy on coconut, but I guess I'm crazy on it, is that's because I find it to be so, so helpful to our bodies and whatever. And I might give you a little teaser, but about why it's so important. And that is basically that back in the days of war, and even in Vietnam and whatever, that they used, when they ran out of IV solutions and whatever, they basically used coconut water for giving people that were injured and dehydrated and whatever, actually injected it as an IV solution right into the veins of the body. And I'll get into that more and explain that why it's so much more coconut water is almost totally comparable to plasma within our bodies, and I'll discuss that more on next Friday's call, if nobody minds.
Good. So, Andre, where are you getting this coconut water?
Where am I getting it?
Well, the coconut?
Here you go. You're going to get me into what I was going to talk about last Friday, but I basically, unfortunately, I just buy it right directly from, I get from mice from Trader Joe. It's a product called Zyco. Just a minute here, I'll reach over. It comes in 2 different sizes, but I'll just kind of go into it real quick to you. It's sodium. It only has 39 milligrams of 8-ounce glance, but it has 495 potassium. And the other thing about coconut water it is actually full of electrolytes. And electrolytes are pretty well much. In other words, if you get dehydrated, that's one of the first things we do with children because of either diarrhea or vomiting or even ourselves, and that is the main electrolytes that we need in our body are potassium, magnesium, sodium, calcium, and phosphorus, and coconut water has that. Now, the best form of coconut water is from a green coconut. And a green coconut is basically, or a young coconut, I should say. But I'll get into all that this next coming Friday and basically explain to you why that coconut water could be very, very beneficial to us because it is a living water. In other words, it has things in it that, I mean, just stop and think. If you take a coconut, if the coconut falls off a tree, it can float across and land on another island or another wherever and land on the beach, and it will actually turn into a coconut, to a palm tree. And the reason is because the water that's in it basically is an endosperm, which basically it can, up to a year, a coconut can actually sprout and grow another tree. And because our bodies are so, we need these things that we just talked about in regards to potassium and certain things and electrolytes in our body. And because of the amount of water that we lose on a daily basis, in most cases, that's why we get a lot of potassium deficiencies, is we're not replacing, we're not drinking enough stuff, particularly water, just water by itself. But when you drink coconut water, you also are getting electrolytes, which basically help the body do what it needs to do and function the way that it needs to function. And I got into a lot of stuff I was going to get into Friday, but
go into it Friday again anyway.
Yeah. But I just buy it, but I buy mine from Trader Joe's. It's called a product called ZICO. The one thing I will recommend, though, and I mentioned this on another call, is that be careful that when you read the label, even in coconut water, it says natural coconut water, is they also have coconut waters that are flavored. And when they are flavored, it has that great thing that I just so remember, that toxic thing, is that carrageenan, and so you got to watch it. That anything pretty well much that has a flavor in it has a carrageenan in it, and that's a very bad toxic, which a lot of people don't know. But in the natural one that I get from Trader Joe's, and it comes in two sizes. It comes in a 1 liter container, which I buy and keep it here, and I utilize. I drink 16 ounces on a day of it. And then they have one that's a little smaller container that I take with me whenever I go to visit people or possibly going out to dinner or whatever. I take one of those with. It's 11 ounces, but because it's 11 ounces, it has 600 and some grams of potassium in it. And but it's high. Well, let's talk Friday, okay? We'll go from there.
Good
deal. Getting late.
Yeah.
You get
you know,
excited,
Monty?
I'm just talking about, because I just think it's so important. You know, like I said, and Ruth, you've always said that knowledge is important, but unless we put it to use. But I also feel that we as individuals are so different that we have to make choices ourselves on what that we need to do to have better health. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap the call because it's 7:46. I'm sorry, but we'll have a great next week. Mary Lou will be with us again on Monday. So everybody go out and hug somebody, smile, laugh, have some fun. Don't be afraid to share Nikin with people. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all later.
Thanks so much, Monty.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Monty. Great call, as always.
Weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.